So good evening again. I am David, and I have not met the speaker before tonight, and so he sent us a little bio, so I'm going to read some sections of it. So our speaker is Jack L. He comes from Vancouver, Washington. He's been active in CODA since 2011. He's worked the 12 steps with the aid of a sponsor and a step study group, and he's been a sponsor for 5 years. He served 2 years as a voting delegate representing the state of Oregon on the annual CODA Service Conference and at the International CODA Convention. His CODA experience has transformed his life from fear to love, from anxiety to serenity, from emotional isolation to emotional intimacy. Today, he loves to share his story about how the tools of recovery have saved his life from loneliness and despair. So, welcome, Jack L.
Good evening. My name is Jack, and I'm a grateful member of Codependence Anonymous. Thank you for inviting me to share my story. I want to start with a full disclosure. You won't hear a single original thought or idea from me tonight. Everything I'm sharing, I learned from my participation in CODA. I recently learned of a concept called an elevator speech. I'm curious, have any of you heard of it, an elevator speech? I think I'm the last person to find out about this. I had to look it up for a definition. An elevator speech is a quick synopsis of your background and experience. The reason it's called an elevator speech is that you should be able to present it during a brief elevator ride. So here's my elevator speech. My mother was a demanding, controlling parent, and I never felt that I was good enough for her. I rarely felt loved. I became a dysfunctional adult looking for a partner who would love me and make me happy. It never worked. I married and divorced 4 times. I eventually learned at the age of 64 that I was codependent and needed to do some serious work on myself. I discovered CODA nearly 8 years ago, and the program taught me about the origins of my codependency and gave me the tools I needed to change my thinking and my attitude and my behavior. It worked. And today, I'm living my life with an abundance of love and serenity. I'm not lacking for anything, and I'm grateful every day. So there you go. Elevator ride completed. If that's all you need to hear, then you're free to leave now. All right. If you still feel like hanging around for more, then I'm going to answer 4 questions tonight. What is codependency? How did I become codependent? How did I find CODA? And what has CODA done for me? So what is codependency? It's interesting that it's been impossible for me to find a solid, clear, clinical definition of codependency, because I don't think there is one. Codependency is multifaceted. It covers so much territory that the best we can do is look at a list of maybe 20 or 30 traits of codependency and recognize that a lot of them apply to us. I've learned that the American Psychiatric Association has a manual called the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, that lists about every disorder you could imagine. The primary purpose of this manual is used by clinical professionals, counselors, therapists, and the insurance companies that pay their bills. And quite simply, if you're one of these counselors or therapists, you have to identify what the problem is if you want to get reimbursed by the insurance company. What I find interesting is among the many hundreds and hundreds of disorders that are out there, codependency is not one that's in the DSM manual. And it's partly because it's just too hard to define. You will find, some of you may have found already, that there are clinical professionals who don't even like to use the word codependency. It works for me. It can be defined in so many different ways. I think you just have to decide whether do I fit in with this group or not. And I clearly fit in with this group. Among the definitions I have found for codependency, just looking it up in the dictionary, it simply says codependency is an excessive emotional or psychological reliance on a partner. And I'll repeat that. It's excessive emotional or psychological reliance on a partner. The key word here is excessive. What we need in this program to heal is moderation of our codependency. Dr. Donna Bevan Lee is one of CODA's founders. She lives up in the Seattle area. She lectures around the Northwest. If you ever get an opportunity to hear her, I highly recommend it. We have several of her talks on our website. And when I say our website, it's the Portland metropolitan area website. Many recordings are available, including Donna and including Ken and Mary R., who founded CODA with her help. Dr. Donna Bevan Lee starts most of her talks by defining codependency with just two words: emotional immaturity. Dr. Donna Bevan Lee points out that if we weren't well nurtured or loved as children, that we don't mature emotionally, and that we're launched into adulthood with a childlike emotional base. She gives an example. Imagine two people who are codependent. They weren't well loved or nurtured as children, a male and a female. They become adults, but one of them never matured emotionally beyond the age of 11, and the other one never matured emotionally beyond the age of 13. Now here they are in adult bodies trying to have a relationship together, and as you might imagine, an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old trying to have a meaningful adult relationship together, it doesn't work. I have some informal definitions of codependency that I like. Codependency is when I take your temperature to determine how I feel. Codependency is wanting someone else to make me feel comfortable. Codependency is me wanting to fix others and insisting that I'm just being helpful. Codependency is when I need you to feel okay before I can feel okay. And quite simply, codependency is trying to control the uncontrollable. In my opinion, codependency is not something that needs to be eliminated. It's something that needs to be moderated. Codependents are usually kind, generous, loving people who simply need to apply those positive traits towards themselves. It's about learning self-love and self-nurturing, and it's crucial for our emotional maturity and stability. And how did I become codependent? 8 years ago, I had no idea what codependency even was. I was a miserable, desperate, lonely, self-sufficient, critical, perfectionistic, judgmental, stubborn, people-pleasing, approval-seeking atheist and a loner with no close friends. Wow, that was me. And here I am today, admitting to a group of strangers just how messed up I was. But I'm grateful for the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope tonight. In the past 8 years, my life has been transformed from fear to love, from anxiety to serenity, from emotional isolation to emotional intimacy. For me, how did all that happen? It was help from Codependence Anonymous and a determination to change my life. First of all, change is not easy, but it's possible if we're desperate and willing. And here are some quotes that have helped me. Nobody changes until the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of changing. And another, I just woke up one day and decided I didn't want to feel like that anymore, ever again, so I changed. Here's my story. My mom was a self-sufficient, critical, controlling, perfectionistic, judgmental, stubborn, people-pleasing, approval-seeking woman. And guess who picked up those traits? It's sometimes called the family disease. We pass it from generation to generation. In childhood, I was never good enough for mom. It especially was apparent in my schoolwork. I never did enough to satisfy my mom. Even as early as the second grade, she came up with a report card, a daily report card system with my second grade teacher, in which she wanted my teacher to put a sticker on a 3x5 card. The sticker represented how well I'd done in school that day. A bluebird meant I'd been a really good student. A yellow canary meant I'd been okay. And then the blackbird, well, speaks for itself. I still think about the fear as a second grader of going up to the teacher at the end of the day and having her contemplate what sticker I deserved for the day, and reaching in her drawer, and if she slapped a blackbird on that 3x5 card, and I was expected, and she might scribble a note on there about why she did that. And then I lived in fear of taking that card home to my mom, where I faced a daily scrutiny. I felt that it was my job to make my mom happy, but I frequently failed. I wanted her love and approval, but she didn't know how to provide that. Because there was no physical or sexual abuse, I thought my childhood was normal. My mom made me attend a Christian Science church. If you're not familiar with Christian Science, it's a faith-based healing religion. I grew up as a child, had no vaccinations, never went to the hospital. I had several childhood illnesses and diseases, including whooping cough, all went untreated. At one point I fell and I broke my nose, and I was not taken in for treatment. All this was confusing to me, and I hated it. It eventually led me to renouncing the church and God. I became a closet atheist for most of my life. I left home at 18 and joined the Air Force. My mom let me know that I was not college material. I didn't deserve to go to college. She wasn't going to pay for college. And her advice to me, and by the way, I did have a dad in the picture too, but mom ran the family. Dad did whatever mom wanted. So it was my mom who influenced all this. Mom told me, you're not staying here, so you might as well join the military. I felt like I'd been kicked out of the home. I felt like a failure, and I was afraid. 18-year-old going out into the world, joining the military, with this history of being told that I wasn't good enough. As an adult, in the Air Force, I trained in electronics and computers. Working with computers was a perfect career for a perfectionist. Computers have to be perfect, and I thought I had to be perfect too. I blamed others for all my problems. I lived my life with if-only thoughts. If only I could get that promotion, I'd be happy. If only I buy that new car, I'll be happy. If only my wife would do this, I'd be happy. If only she would stop doing this, I'd be happy. I lived most of my adult life with those kind of thoughts spinning in my head. I believed that happiness was out there somewhere, and I just had to find it. I was attracted to emotionally unavailable women whom I could fix. It took me a long time to figure out that I think subconsciously I was trying to recreate the relationship that I had with my mom, and to fix that and heal that and make it better. So I had a pretty good knack for finding emotionally unavailable women whom I thought I could fix and help them, and that they would be appreciative. I was married and divorced 4 times. At the age of 64, just 8 years ago, I was miserable and I felt like a complete failure again. I stayed in failed relationships way too long because I was worried about what other people would think. I didn't want to admit that I was a failure. I stayed in my last marriage a good 5 years beyond what I should have. 5 absolutely miserable years, and the reason I didn't leave or initiate a divorce was I was truly worried about what other people would think about me. There goes Jack. Failed again. Another divorce. And rather than facing up to the facts that the relationship was dead, I stayed there just because I wanted to avoid what other people might think about me. I didn't know it at the time, but I'd finally received what some people call the gift of desperation. So how did I find CODA? Finding CODA was a huge gift for me. All of the following happened in 3 months' time. My fourth wife was an alcoholic. My counselor suggested going to Al-Anon. At one of my first Al-Anon meetings, now keep in mind I'm an atheist going to an Al-Anon meeting where they got the 12 steps on the wall, where they got this God stuff up there. And I decided to challenge the Al-Anon group. It was my first or second meeting, and I shared, and I just said, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm an atheist. I don't think this God stuff's going to help me at all. I'm only here because my counselor suggested that I come here. And that's pretty much all I said. And at the end of the meeting, three people immediately surrounded me off to the side. And one of them said, Jack, you need to know that all three of us are atheists and this program can help you. I truly believe if I hadn't challenged the group, if those people hadn't have been in that room, if they hadn't have told me what they did, I don't think I would have come back to another Al-Anon meeting. That would have been my last 12-step meeting ever. I truly believe that. I went to see an addiction counselor to fix my wife. My objective was to perhaps have an intervention conducted on her. I was going to help her. I was going to fix her. This counselor was highly recommended. She charged $225 an hour. I'll always remember that number because I saw her for 2 hours. I spent most of that 2 hours complaining about my wife at my expense. And at the end of the 2 hours, I'm thinking she's going to have a plan. And all she said was, well, I might be able to help you with an intervention, but more importantly, you need to know right now that you are highly codependent. Now, I didn't even know what codependent meant at the time, but it sounded like she just insulted me somehow. So I had to go home. While I'm writing out this check for $450, I was pretty pissed off. Like, I thought she was supposed to be fixing my wife, and now she's telling me that I'm the one who needs to have some work done. So I went home and I Googled codependency. I didn't like what I saw, but I started to recognize myself on these lists of codependent traits. Shortly after I separated from my wife, I learned about CODA from an Al-Anon member. I started going to CODA meetings. I heard about a 28-day inpatient recovery program for codependents, and I signed up. I got a sponsor and started working the steps. All of these items happened in 3 months' time. Early in my recovery, my sponsor said several important things. He said in Alcoholics Anonymous, he found sobriety. In CODA and Al-Anon, he found happiness. I wanted what he had. He said he just doesn't care what people think about him anymore. Like, what? How can you not care what people think about you? I mean, that I had barely started on this path to recovery, and here's my sponsor saying, I just don't care what people think about me. Well, I cared a lot about what people thought about me. And he said that as you go through life, as you go through recovery, no matter what you're facing, he said, there's only two things you ever need to remember. He said, number one, make sure you're facing the right direction. And number two, take one more step. And I like that metaphor, because I totally got it right away. Like, am I fixated on a problem over here when I really would be better off if I'm going this direction instead? And just take one more step. I got a new counselor. I told her time was wasting. I told the counselor, I'm 64 years old. My fourth marriage just failed. I need help. I need serious help. And I don't want this to be a five-year process. I really need some answers, and I need them quick. I need them now. Well, she wasn't that quick in getting answers for me. But after a couple months of seeing her, she said, I have you diagnosed. I have a diagnosis for you, if you would like to hear it. And this is one she took out of that DSM manual I told you about earlier. She said, you have an anxiety disorder. I didn't like hearing that either, but I got what I asked for. And in time, I realized she was right. I was a highly anxious, highly strung, dysfunctional individual. My therapist observed that I tend to repeat myself. She said, your attitude seems to be, perhaps if I explain this to you one more time, you'll understand that I'm right. Before CODA, for my entire adult life, 90% of the time I had negative thoughts spinning in my head, just always. And there were a bunch of them. If I were to make a list, there were probably 10, 12, 14 things that I just had going in my head, jumping from one to the other. Things that were bugging me, more of those if-only thoughts. If I had 10 negative thoughts spinning in my head, and a new negative thought came along, it didn't feel any different. Or conversely, if one of those negative things went away, still didn't feel any different. Not much difference between having 10 negative thoughts or having 8 or having 12. It's all the same. So what has CODA done for me? So here's where the solution begins. After my fourth marriage failed, I finally realized that I needed to figure out my role in the failure of these relationships. I'm a very analytical person, and I needed to analyze the source of my problems. There must be something that these four women have in common. Me. And for the first time in my life, I knew that I had to live alone, work on my issues, and avoid dating or getting into romantic relationships until I knew that I was ready. 1 year of work in CODA turned into 2 years, still living alone, still not dating. I was going to 5 or more meetings a week, including other fellowships, but mostly CODA. I learned that what I focus on gets bigger. It was an early concept I picked up in recovery. If I focus on problems, then my problems get bigger. But if I focus on solutions, the solutions get bigger. It was a very important concept for me to learn. I learned that I'm happier when I focus thinking on being grateful for what I have instead of focusing and having negative thoughts for what I don't have. A friend I met in recovery early on heard me saying something like I screwed up about something or I made a mistake. He gently suggested something to me. He said, Jack, instead of saying you screwed up or you made a mistake, try using the word unskillful. And I've been practicing that ever since. I like unskillful because it's gentle. It's forgiving. It's me saying to somebody else, but I'm hearing my own words come back to me, and what I'm saying and what I'm hearing from myself is that I simply didn't have the skills at the time to do the right thing, to do the healthy thing. And in CODA, I'm learning the skills. This program's worked for me because of patience and practice. I've been patient and forgiving with myself and others, and I've repeatedly practiced new behaviors and new ways of thinking until my old ways eventually faded away. I began to realize that my close code of friends were my practice partners. As I spent more and more time in CODA, meeting people who were on the like-minded, on the same journey that I was, we wanted better things for ourselves, we wanted healthier relationships in our lives. And I began to realize as I started having conversations with these people in recovery, and I'm talking about men and women, and every once in a while, perhaps after a meeting, there might be a woman who would come up to me and ask if I'd be willing to go out for lunch. And I would immediately say, well, I'm not dating. I mean, early on, I just turned these invitations down, like, well, I'm not dating. And then I realized this doesn't have to be about dating. I can have lunch with a woman that has nothing to do with dating. So I would, anytime something like this came up, I would say, I'd love to have lunch with you, just so you understand I'm not dating, but I would love to have a conversation with you about CODA and your own journey. And I love this because it took off any pressure. I'd never had an opportunity to meet with women where it was on a friendly, casual basis with no expectation that maybe something's going to happen here. I was more relaxed. I was able to have intimate conversations with these women and with men. In my recovery, I've met equally with men and women. And on the men's side, it's amazing too. I have personal, intimate conversations with several men in my life that are way more personal and intimate than I ever had with one of my wives. The fact that I can sit down with another man in recovery and be open about my feelings and trusting and be vulnerable and authentic and we can share on that level, it's just been very powerful for me. I started dealing with my belief system. I realized that many of my beliefs were dysfunctional or were simply not true. I learned to accept the mystery of my higher power. Now, one question that comes up, am I still an atheist? Well, technically, perhaps. I've always had a problem with the God thing. And my sponsor helped me with this. He said, Jack, you don't have to call it God. You can call it whatever you want. The important thing early on for me was to turn it over, to let go of my need to be in control, to let go of my need to have answers, to let go of my need to fix things. My sponsor said, Jack, just practice letting it go and watch what happens. So I didn't even know what I was turning it over to. Early on, I just had to practice letting go. And much to my amazement, the more I let go of things, the better my life became. I learned that half the things that I was trying to fix didn't need to be fixed, that I was wasting an awful lot of time and energy trying to fix problems that didn't need my help. Many of my problems just kind of evaporated on their own. Here I'm trying to force a solution to a problem, and if I just wait a week or two or whatever, like, hey, that problem just fixed itself, and I didn't have to do anything. So for me, my higher power is a mystery. I learned to turn things over. I've reached a point where I'm comfortable calling it my higher power, but trust me, I cannot define my higher power. I can't explain my higher power. I can't justify it. All I know is that if I turn things over, that mysteriously, things turn out for the best for me. And it happens over and over again. Over the last 8 years, this has been demonstrated to me dozens of times. And I'm okay with the mystery of my higher power. I'm simply okay with not knowing how that works. I had a breakthrough conversation with my mother. It was about 6 years ago, and she was 91 years old. And I was visiting her, and she had dementia. She was very forgetful. She would repeat stories and sentences multiple times within the same conversation. And when I was visiting her, I had about 2 years in CODA at the time. And I decided to share a little bit with her about my CODA experience without identifying it by name. I just told my mom, I said, Mom, I go to these weekly meetings, and I called it support group. I said, this group, we share our stories with each other. The only requirement for membership in this group is a desire for healthy and loving relationships. I told my mom how much it was helping me, and she was listening very attentively. And when I was done, just with that brief explanation about my CODA meetings, she said, you know, just the fact that you shared something very personal with me, she said, I'd like to share something personal with you. She said, I haven't shared this with anybody ever. And she started to tell me this story about how she was a 9-year-old girl. And I quickly did the math. My mom was born in 1921, so this was around 1930. It was the beginning of the Great Depression. And my mom said she was visiting a girlfriend's house in the neighborhood, and while she was at the house, she saw a quarter on the table, and she took the quarter. Well, later that evening, her girlfriend's father came over to my mom's house, and her dad answered the door, and the neighbor guy was basically confronting my mom's father about, you know, saying, did your daughter take that quarter? And her dad, my grandfather, asked her, and she denied. She said, no, I didn't take the quarter. And that pretty much was it, but for the fact that my mom felt guilty and disclosed to her mom what she had done. Her mom, in turn, told her dad that she had taken the quarter. Now, keep in mind, this is my mom at 91 telling me this story. She then said her dad grabbed her and dragged her into the bathroom and grabbed this leather strap that was used for sharpening razors, and he beat her with that leather strap. And she started to tell me about how she lived in fear of her dad all the time, that he would come home from work and he would start drinking beer, and he would drink until he passed out. And eventually he would come to, and my mom and her sisters were afraid of what he was going to do next. Sometimes he would yell at them. Sometimes he would hit them. He was very unpredictable, a rageaholic. And as my mom's telling me this story, she's starting to cry. And the strangest thing happened. In my eyes, my mom was getting smaller and smaller. And in front of me, I saw this frightened 9-year-old girl. And she started saying, I was so scared. I was so scared. My emotions came crashing down on me. I was overwhelmed at everything that was going on right there. Just in those few minutes, I learned that my grandfather, who I loved and respected, was an alcoholic. I didn't know that. He was a rageaholic. He was abusive. My mom was frightened of her, of him. And then it just overwhelmed me why my mom was the way she was raising me. She was traumatized as a little girl. She grew into a codependent adult feeling that she wasn't enough, that she couldn't make her father happy. I realized that's why my mom was so controlling. That's why she needed to be in control of her life as an adult. I I was eating breakfast this morning, and my computer is nearby, and I have a screensaver that brings up inspirational messages. So sometimes when I'm sitting there eating breakfast, I can actually read some of these messages go by. And one popped up on the screen this morning. At the same time I'm thinking about doing this talk tonight, thinking about my mom, and the message on the screen said, "Until we have seen someone's darkness, we don't really know who they are. And until we have forgiven someone's darkness, we don't really know what love is." I went over and I hugged my mom and tried to comfort her, and we both ended up crying. It was a profound connection for me with my mom. In that moment, I was able to forgive her. Everything started to make sense. How I became codependent. I collect and read positive affirmations and inspirational messages every day. I find it essential to feed my brain a steady diet of positive energy. And here are a few of my favorites. I do not fix problems. I fix my thinking. Then problems fix themselves. You're not here to make others understand you. You are here to understand yourself. Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we choose to react to it. There is no growth in the comfort zone, and there is no comfort in the growth zone. Expectations are premeditated resentments. There is no good weather or bad weather. There is simply weather. I'm not saying that this program is easy. I'm saying that it's worth it. Don't believe everything you think. My life may not be perfect, but it has many perfect moments. The problem is not the problem. The problem is my attitude about the problem. This program is for people who want it, not for people who need it. Every day that I choose to be anxious or worried is a day that I rob myself of joy. And I like this last one. The reason this program works is because we all don't go crazy on the same day. Think about that. So in summary, I'd like to leave you with the following thoughts. I can't do this by myself. It's a program of we. It's no coincidence that the first word of the first step is we. We admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. As a codependent, I built walls around me brick by brick in my attempt to protect myself and to keep others from seeing me and my flaws and insecurities. I didn't want to be judged or criticized, so I avoided people and avoided intimate conversations. But this wall I built also served to isolate me from people and kept me from connecting in an emotionally healthy and intimate way. And the wall prevented joy and happiness from entering my life. Fortunately, I learned that a wall that is built brick by brick can also be dismantled brick by brick. And CODA gave me the willingness and the courage and the skills to take down that wall and start connecting meaningfully and lovingly with others. The program taught me the power and the joy of being vulnerable with people I trust. I love this program because there's nothing in the program I can argue with. Because nobody preaches to me or tells me what to believe. Because I'm encouraged to define my own higher power. Because I'm encouraged to take what I can use and leave the rest. Because I'm encouraged to work the program at my own pace. Because I've learned that I can be vulnerable and authentic, and that I'll always be loved and accepted with no judgment or criticism within these rooms. I look at CODA as my personal GPS system. If I'm off course or lost, my CODA principles steer me back. Most of us have some form of GPS system today. The one I have, if I make a wrong turn, the screen says recalculate, and it steers me back where I belong. I love the metaphor, the way CODA works for me. If I take a wrong turn or if I'm off course, if I pay attention to my thinking, pay attention to my higher power, I'm steered back on course. And remember when I told you that my head used to be filled with negative thoughts? Well, today it's filled with 99% positive thoughts. My baseline way of going through life is with serenity. A few years ago, I reached a point where I realized that my life was getting a little bit boring, and I now know that that's what serenity is all about. Initially, serenity will feel like boredom. Like I'm not feeling like I have to be doing something or fixing something or going somewhere. It's like I can be just okay the way I am right now and maybe a little bit bored. I love my serenity because when any disturbance comes along, and there will always be disturbances in one form or another, but whenever disturbance comes along, because of my serenity, I'm immediately aware of the disturbance. I mean, it's just like, whoa, what just landed there? That gives me immediate awareness that I've got something to deal with. And sometimes that disturbance is nothing more than a misplaced thought that landed into my head somehow. A lot of times it's like, oh, that's an interesting thought. Wonder why I got focused on that for 5 seconds. And I can just dismiss it, let it go. Other times requires me to process what's going on. Why am I feeling this disturbance right now? Is there something I should be doing? Should I be applying the serenity prayer? Is there something I can change here, or is it time for me to let go once again? Now, here's something that's a complete mystery to me. In my 8 years in CODA, I've noticed that drivers on the road are getting less aggressive and more courteous. Go figure. And my greatest reward has been finding a loving, nurturing, emotionally available partner. After spending 2 years living alone, working this program diligently, not dating, I finally decided that I had the tools I needed, and I ventured off into online dating, which is a whole other story. And for the first time in my life, I was dating with awareness. I was paying attention to everything. I was asking myself, what do I need in a relationship? And I went on a lot of first dates that never got beyond the first date. If I saw a red flag in a first date, something, or it didn't feel right, like, why would I want a second date? And I got much better at that. And after 2.5 years of serious dating, I was beginning to think I was too discriminating, because I had met so many women online and it was getting to be pretty tedious and crazy. And a friend of mine even said, Jack, why don't you just kind of give this up for a while? And then I found the woman who is my partner today. And in that moment that I met her, I knew what I had been waiting for. I knew I needed to take all the time that I took. I knew there was a reason for me being patient. I knew there was a reason for me questioning my thinking. I owe it all to CODA. In CODA, I've learned the power of observing my thinking. I think it's the single most important concept I've learned is paying attention to my thought process. Before CODA, I would get a thought and I would just react. Like, a lot of it was just automatic. Like, I've got to challenge that, or I have to argue with that, or I have to change something. And I didn't give it much thought. In CODA, I've learned to take the time to process my thinking, to observe my thinking, and to ask myself, why is that thought there? Is that thought true? Or is it just a random thought? Can I just let that thought go? Is it time to apply the serenity prayer again? Early in recovery, I went to a speaker meeting, and the speaker was an Al-Anon and AA speaker. And I think I had maybe 6 months in recovery at the time. And he said, you need to know that for every year you're in recovery, it buys you 1 second of buffer time before you react to something. Now, I found that kind of frustrating at the time. I'm quickly doing the math, like, I'm going to 5 meetings a week. I've got a sponsor. I'm devoting my life to recovery. I've been doing this for 6 months, and all I've got to show for it is a half second of time. But here's what I learned. A half second can be enough. The important thing is that there is an interval of time there that can be just enough to disrupt our thought process, to challenge our thinking, and to make a healthy choice. And I think his theory is pretty true, that I've been gaining about a second per year. I've earned myself about 8 seconds now. That's a pretty long time. I've learned the power of gratitude, including being grateful for things I don't like, and perhaps especially for things I don't like. I've learned, a friend in recovery taught me this. He said, Jack, no matter what happens to you in life, especially the bad things that happen to you in life, he said there are always 3 things that you can learn if you look for them. So the first thing is look for the lesson. In whatever problem you're dealing with, look for the lesson in dealing with that problem. He said the second thing, look for the gift. And again, no matter how bad the circumstance is or how difficult the person is you're dealing with, look for the gift in that problem or that relationship. And finally, he said, the third thing is always there. If you look for it, look for the emotional healing. By facing our problems courageously, there is a healing process that takes place. I've learned that if I avoid the difficult things in life, there is no healing. There is no growth. I have a nightly ritual that revolves around my gratitude list. The last thing I do every night before I go to bed is run through a mental gratitude list for the day. My requirement is there has to be at least 3 things I'm grateful for that day, no matter how bad the day was. And that's my minimum requirement, is 3. Most days I can come up with 10 or 20 things that I'm grateful for. Last thing I do before I go to bed, I want my head processing all the things that I'm grateful for today. And speaking of getting back to gratitude for things I don't like, I've learned about the concept of AFGOs, A-F-G-O. Anybody here know what an AFGO is? An AFGO is another effing growth opportunity. I've learned the power of applying the serenity prayer every day. I've learned the power of accepting reality and letting go of the need to be in control. I've learned the power of forgiveness, especially forgiving myself. I've learned the power of letting go of resentments and making amends. I've learned the power of letting go of anything that is not my business. I've learned the power of letting go of anything that is not serving me well. I've learned the power of letting go of self-inflicted suffering. I've learned the power of letting go of expectations. I've learned the power of letting go of people who zap my positive energy. I've learned the power of letting go of problems that aren't mine to solve. And amazingly, by doing less, I get more. Somehow that seems to be defying some law of nature or physics or something. Like, how is it that I'm doing less but I'm getting more, but it works that way for me? This program is partially a learning process, but it's mostly an unlearning process. And I've learned in CODA to accept reality rather than resist it or fight it. I was challenged by this almost 2 years ago when I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. The prognosis wasn't good at the time. They told me I had 1 to 2 years to live and I should get my affairs in order. Thanks to my CODA experience, thanks to my positive way of approaching life, thanks to having an emotionally available and healthy partner beside me, I almost immediately decided that I'm not going to fight this, I'm not going to resist this. It's going to happen, and there's not much I can do about it. I'll do what I can do, within reason, but I'm just not going to be one of those people who fights their cancer. I didn't want that negative mentality. I decided on the spot that, you know what, if I've only got a year or two to left, dang it, I'm going to make it the best year or two of my life. Whatever it takes, I'm going to take advantage of that time. I'm going to get really focused. Let me tell you, when you're told you've got terminal cancer, it gets you focused in a hurry. And I actually started a cancer gratitude list. All the things that I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that they caught it early. I'm grateful that it turned out that it was somewhat misdiagnosed and I've actually got way more time than they thought initially. I'm grateful that I have a health care plan that covers almost everything. I'm grateful for quality doctors. I found a specialist in Denver. I go twice a year now to the specialist in Denver. He's calling the shots. I'm grateful for him. I'm grateful that I can afford him because my health plan doesn't cover the Denver doctor. I'm grateful for pain medications. My gratitude list for cancer just goes on and on. I'm grateful that it got me so focused on what's important in life. The fact is, the first year I lived with my cancer diagnosis could easily have been the worst year of my life. I could have been focused on the why me, I'm a victim mentality, but I chose not to do that. And I realized after a year of living with it that first year living with it was the best year of my life. And it's true. And now I've got nearly a second year living with this, and it continues to be the best years of my life. And if you're younger than me, and I think most of you are, I'm glad you're here. If you're already working the program in codependency, or if you're interested in learning more about CODA and codependency, it makes me feel good to see younger people becoming aware. I wish I could have found CODA when I was a lot younger. I didn't find it till I was 64, but I will forever be grateful that I found it when I was 64. However many years I have left, I know they're going to be the best years of my life. I already know that. So am I cured of codependency? No. I'll always be a work in progress. But I do feel that the sad, lonely, afraid inner child inside me has been healed. And that inner child has matured into an emotionally healthy, loving adult. I'm grateful that my parents both lived long enough for me to make my peace with them. They both lived into their 90s and died just a few years ago. I'm grateful that I've been able to learn the source of my parents' codependency and that this information has allowed me to mentally forgive them. And here's a great quote that perfectly captures my experience in CODA. It's from Jenna Galbit. "I find it extremely liberating to see that I was the cause of all my problems. With this realization, I have also learned that I am my own solution. This is the big gift of personal accountability. When we stop blaming external forces and own up to our own responsibility, we become the ultimate creators of our destiny." And another good quote, "One day it just clicks. You realize what's important and what isn't. You learn to care less about what other people think of you and more about what you think of yourself. You realize how far you've come, and you remember when you thought things were such a mess that you would never recover. And you smile. You smile because you are truly proud of yourself and the person you've fought to become." And finally, I want to close with a poem by Mary Oliver, who just died recently. "I am not a poetry type of person. There's something about my brain that doesn't process poetry very well. A lot of it I just don't get. But when I read this piece early in my recovery, it was profoundly meaningful to me. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, 'Mend my life,' each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough in a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you. My name is Jack, and I'm a grateful member of CODA."